You are listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, today is what most of us recognize as the birthday of the nation, which commemorates the official announcement of the signing of the unanimous declaration of the 13 colonies on July 4th, 1776. The ratification and signing actually took place on July 2nd, 1776. And the declaration was read to the militia and to the soldiers of the Continental Army of the Republic on July the 4th, 1776. It is a terrible thing that most Americans celebrate the 4th of July weekend without ever reflecting even for one moment upon the meaning of this day. I hope to bring some of that meaning into your homes, to sort of give you back what maybe time has sort of erased from much of our national memory.
Flying high.
America, ladies and gentlemen, is not a dream. It was a dream in the beginning. It was the greatest dream ever experienced in the minds of men. And it wasn't just a dream for that century. It had been a dream since the very beginning of humankind. A place to live. A place where man could truly be free. All men, not just one or two. It was a strange dream. It was a dream that was out of place. Didn't belong in the world up until that point. And for most of the world, it didn't belong then either. It was a dream that man could rule himself. No one had ever dared to voice opinions like that, because to do so would bring a visit of the king's guard. Well, in this country, men dared to dream, and they dared to voice them. You see, this was a place like no other in the history of the world. It was, in that time, recognized as a new world. You see, you hear the term bandied about now about a new world order. It didn't begin today. In fact, it didn't even begin then. It's been a dream of man for centuries. And certain men have made it their task to try to bring it about. A new world. A new world utopian order. Wherein man could live happy. Not endangered by himself or by others. Many experiments have been brought about by these men to determine what the best method would be to rule such a world, or to control such a world, or to govern, if you will, such a world. And this was one of those experiments. See, most of the founding fathers belonged to secret organizations, secret societies, fraternal orders. They were a part of what is sometimes known as the Hidden College, the Illuminati, the Illumined Ones, the Adepts, the Wise Men, whatever you want to call them. And this was one of those great experiments. Another one occurred years later in what became the Soviet Union. The Founding Fathers told us what we had. They told us what it was that they had put together. They told us what would happen if we did not protect it and guard it and make it work. And to make it work, because this was the riskiest experiment of all. It meant giving the common herd freedom, the common man. People with little or no education. This was considered to be an extremely dangerous idea. It was the most liberal idea ever conceived. In fact, it was known as the Great Liberalism. And the Founding Fathers, in their day, were not recognized as great men. They were engaged in rebellion against their country, against their king, and they were traitors. And if we had lost the Revolutionary War, they would have surely hung. But they were willing to take that risk because they had a dream. They had a dream of a perfect world. And this was going to be one of those great experiments, and that's exactly the term that they used in referring to what they were doing, the great experiment, to see if it could work, to see if the common man could handle freedom, to see if the common man was responsible, to see if he could stand upon his own two feet and take the risk that comes with liberty and with freedom and maintain it and keep vigil over it and be prepared to die to defend it for his children and his grandchildren and his great-grandchildren, for what the Founding Fathers called their posterity. And they told us in their day, during their lives, in their speeches, in their writings, exactly what would happen if we failed in our responsibility. You see, this was a land of promise. This was a land of dreams until the dream was made real. It was a land of incredible, absolutely incredible, breathtaking beauty. It was a land that men and women fell in love with. It was a land that was worth dying for.
Oh, Shendo, I long to hear you.
the men and women who populated the colonies that made up the settlements on the east coast of the North American continent, which later became the United States of America, were loyal subjects of England. These were English colonies. They did not want to go to war against their own country. They would do almost anything to prevent it, but neither were these men and women inclined to submit to tyranny. You see, they had come to these shores, most of them, in order to escape some despotism. In particular, some religious persecution. Many of them were criminals who, in return for forgiveness of their debts or their crimes, were sent to America to populate this land and to make it fruitful. Many came as indentured servants or as slaves. There were many free men who came to these shores who were not European, who were not white, and who were not Christian, but who helped build this great nation. On April the 19th, 1775, General Gage sent troops to seize the arms of the colonists stored at Lexington and Concord. The news of this movement leaked, and riders were sent throughout the countryside, not just one, as legend tells us, the midnight ride of Paul Revere, but many, as you've learned on past episodes of The Hour of the Time. These riders went far and wide, alerted the countryside, and people in those days know what Americans today seem to have forgotten, that a people without the means to protect themselves against a tyrannical government are soon enslaved. And history has shown that many of these enslaved peoples have also been completely and totally eradicated from off the face of this earth. Genocide is the term that we use today. The elimination of entire peoples who are politically incorrect has always followed the disarmament of any population. And so, the colonists grabbed their muskets, their rucksacks, and they raced toward Lexington and Concord. Only a few managed to muster upon the green at Lexington when the troops arrived and faced these militiamen, who at the very most might be considered to be poorly trained at best, had the audacity to stand up against the mightiest army that existed upon the face of the earth, and no one knows who fired the first shot. But many of those brave English colonists who resist their own army in order that they may not confiscate their weapons in their storehouses were shot down. Many died. Many were wounded. And the army marched on toward Concord. Militiamen rushed from everywhere. And by the time the British army, or the advance segments of it, reached the Concord Bridge, a large contingent of colonial militia had assembled on the other side. And thus began what is now known as the Revolutionary War. The British troops, those that survived, those that made it back to Boston, were lucky, because along the entire way, they were sniped at and fired on and attacked and shot down, and their numbers were decimated. It was a terrible rout, a terrible defeat. It was the actual third battle of what later became known as the American Revolutionary War. The first occurred at Lexington Green, the second at Concord Bridge, the third was a running battle along the entire route that the British marched back to their barracks at Boston. And even today, reading about it, it seems like another time. Fought with ancient weapons, fought by men and women who really didn't want to fight that war, who didn't want to start a war. But neither did they want the conditions to exist in the new world, in their new world, that had forced them to leave their homes in Europe. And so something else began. Something else, ladies and gentlemen, began to be born. Something wonderful.
I'm getting ready for the judgment day, my And now, ladies and gentlemen, a peaceful, deeply religious, and agrarian people found themselves in a position of having to make a decision of whether to go to war. And if they went to war, which side would they fight upon?
I saw a peaceful old valley with a carpet of corn for a floor. And I heard a voice within me whisper, "This is worth fighting for." I saw a little old cabin and the river that flowed by the door. And I heard a voice within me whisper, "This is worth fighting for." Didn't I build that cabin? Didn't I plant that corn? Didn't my folks before me fight for this country before I was born? I gathered my loved ones around me, and I gazed at each face I adore. And I heard that voice within me thunder, "This is worth fighting for."
The other day, we passed through a little old valley. Had a carpet of corn for a floor. And it seemed there was something way down inside of me kept saying, "Son, that's worth fighting for." A little further along, we passed an old dilapidated cabin. One of them kind with Old Man River flowing right by the door. Seemed like this thing down inside of me kept on saying, "Son, that's worth fighting for." So I got to thinking, didn't I help to build that cabin? And didn't I help to plant that corn? And didn't my folks way yonder before me fight for this country way before I was born?
I gathered my loved ones around me, and I gazed at each face I adore. And I heard that voice within me thunder, "This is worth fighting for."
And so decisions were made, and the die was cast. In Congress, July 4th, 1776, the unanimous declaration of the 13 colonies. When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to effect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing inevitably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present king of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. He has refused his assent to laws the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance unless suspended in their operation till his assent should be obtained. And when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them. He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people, unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to them and formidable to tyrants only. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from the depository of their public records, for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures. He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly for opposing with manly firmness his invasions on the rights of the people. He has refused for a long time after such dissolutions to cause others to be elected, whereby the legislative powers incapable of annihilation have returned to the people at large for their exercise, the state remaining in the meantime exposed to all the dangers of invasion from without and convulsions within. He has endeavored to prevent the population of these states for that purpose obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migrations hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of lands. He has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers. He has made judges dependent on his will alone for their tenure of their offices and the amount and payment of their salaries. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. He has kept among us, in times of peace, standing armies without the consent of our legislatures. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation. For quartering large bodies of armed troops among us, for protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states, for cutting off our trade with all parts of the world, for imposing taxes on us without our consent, for depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury, for transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses, for abolishing the free system of English laws in a neighboring province, establishing therein an arbitrary government and enlarging its boundaries so as to render it at once an example and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule into these colonies. For taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our government. For suspending our own legislatures and declaring them invested with the power to legislate for us in all cases whatsoever. He has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. He is at this time transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny, already begun with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages, and totally unworthy the head of a civilized nation. He has constrained our fellow citizens taken captive on the high seas to bear arms against their country, to become the executioners of their friends and brethren, or to fall themselves by their hands. He has excited domestic insurrections amongst us, and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages, whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Nor have we been wanting in attentions to our British brethren. We have warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to extend an unwarrantable jurisdiction over us. We have reminded them of the circumstances of our immigration and settlement here. We have appealed to their native justice and magnanimity, and we have conjured them by the ties of our common kindred to disavow these usurpations, which would inevitably interrupt our connections and correspondence. They too have been deaf to the voice of justice and to consanguinity. We must therefore acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our separation and hold them, as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, in peace, friends. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, in general Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do, in the name and by authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connections between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and to do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. This act, ladies and gentlemen, led to the eventual penning of an Articles of Confederation. And when that did not seem to meet the need of the colonies, a constitution and a Bill of Rights.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union,
establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, to ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America.
We the people.
I know that many of you have never heard all of the words of the Star-Spangled Banner, and I think it's about time that you did, because the Star-Spangled Banner is an incredible piece of music, very difficult for most of us to sing because of the range of notes in its composition, but it has a message that is incredibly moving. And so I'm going to read that to you now. All the verses. Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming? And the rockets' red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner still wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave? On the shore dimly seen through the mists of the deep, where the foe's haughty host in dread silence reposes, what is that which the breeze or the towering steep, as it fitfully blows, half conceals, half discloses? Now it catches the gleam of the morning's first beam, in full glory reflected now shines on the stream. 'Tis the star-spangled banner, Oh, long may it wave for the land of the free and the home of the brave. And where is that band who so vauntingly swore that the havoc of war and the battle's confusion, a home and a country, should leave us no more? Their blood is washed out their foul footsteps' pollution. No refuge could save the hireling and slave from the terror of flight or the gloom of the grave. And the star-spangled banner in triumph doth wave for the land of the free and the home of the brave. Oh, thus it ever, when free men shall stand between their loved homes and the foe's desolation, blessed with victory and peace, may our heaven-rescued land praise the power that hath made and preserved us a nation. Then conquer we must, for our cause it is just. And this be our motto: in God is our trust. And the star-spangled banner in triumph shall wave for the land of the free and the home of the brave.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming?
Founding fathers gave us was the blueprint for the ultimate achievement of the strivings, the yearnings, the dreams of all of humankind since the beginning. We held it in our hand. It was the pearl of great price. It was and still is worth dying for. And many men and women have died for that promise. You see, it was a dream before it was constructed and came into the world. And then no longer was it a dream. It was a promise that allowed men to dream, to become whatever they wanted to become, whatever they were capable of achieving. For the first time in the history of the world, man was free. Literally, a king and queen in his or her own right. And over the years, that promise has extended to many other peoples. That promise eliminated slavery. That promise has caused poor, unhappy people living under tyranny all over the world to set their eyes on the shores of this country, with only one thought in their mind, to get here however they had to get here, and even if they had to die in the process, in order that they could also be free. And so why, ladies and gentlemen, are we so eager to give it away? For some imaginary New World Order under a United Nations charter that it will do away with war forever. If you believe that, if you really believe that and you fall for that deception, you'll be so sorry for the rest of your lives. Now, I want you to do something. There's a movie out now. It's called The Patriot. And it stars Mel Gibson. Everyone listening to this broadcast, if you really want to understand what the Revolutionary War was all about, if you really want to see the purpose of the militia, if you really want to find out what guns are for, go see Patriot. Go see it now, tonight, if you can. Don't wait. Go see it. Take your children. Take your friends, your neighbors, your relatives. Go see that movie. Make sure that you understand it. You see, there really are some things worth dying for, and freedom is at the very top of the list. And if you don't accept that message and understand it, and if you don't adopt that philosophy, very soon you will lose freedom for yourselves and for all of your posterity. And the great experiment would have failed, you see, because if it works, it will be the New World Order. If it doesn't, humankind will once again be enslaved, as it has always been enslaved throughout its history. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. Seek out and join a militia. If you can't find one, start one of your own.
I have long feared that my sins would return to visit me. And the cost is more than I can bear.
A past he wanted to forget.
I've been to war, and I have no desire to do so again. I have 7 children. I do not wish to leave them fatherless.
A family threatened by war.
We have to do something.
I forbid you to go!
My child!
You're my child!
A son fighting for his beliefs.
Father, I thought you were a man of principle.
When you have a family of your own, perhaps you'll understand.
When I have a family of my own, I won't hide behind it.
Hang him, put his body on display.
Colonel, I beg you, by the rules of war.
Would you like a lesson, sir, in the rules of war?
Or perhaps your children will. Before this war is over, I'm going to kill you.
Why wait?
I'll come back. Might I request, sir, that you transfer my son here under my command? I'll fire first. Start with the officers.
But under when or where they're going to strike?
Where'd you learn all that riding, shooting?
My father taught me.
How many were there?
Maybe one.
One man. Sounds more like a ghost than a man.
This ghost. Bring him to me.
How many men does Cornwallis have under his command?
12,000 redcoats.
I'm here to enlist every man willing. Who's with us?
This is not the conduct of a gentleman.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Before they were soldiers, they were family. Before they were legends, they were great heroes. And before there was a nation, there was a fight for freedom. And soon, it must happen all over again.
Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. He hath loosed the fateful lightning of his terrible swift sword. His truth is marching on. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. His truth is marching on. I have seen him in the watchfires of 100 circling camps. They have builded him an altar in the evening dews and lamps. I can read his righteous sentence by the dim and flaring lamps. His day is marching on. Glory, glory,
hallelujah.